Good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining us. I thought it would be a nice opportunity to take some time and cut through some of the noise and some of the headlines which we've been seeing and really get a good steer from one of our economists, George, as to, in essence, where we've come from, how we've got to this point, what's being proposed to the EU, get a little bit more detail on that, what could happen from here, which I think is the question on everyone's lips, and potentially even more so of interest, what could happen to the pound. For me, I thought it's also worthwhile looking at a few interesting things. So last Friday, which was actually a day that I managed to take on holiday, was actually our busiest day since the day after Brexit. So it was the busiest day since June 24th, 2016. Since then, we've had a lot of busy days, both with importers and exporters, getting in touch and looking at different ideas and wanting to talk about what this change in rate and what a potential further change in the rate could mean for their business. It's also worth noting that in the FX options market, implied volatility is extremely high, very elevated, in the 1 week, 2 week, 1 month, and 2 month space. But after 2 months, there's a noticeable drop-off, and it's a closer to normal situation. So there's this, I guess you would almost say, feeling in the market that we're expecting something big to happen, or at least that something big could happen over the next 2 months, and then for things to then calm down a little bit. So for me, this is a good opportunity for George just to give us a good steer and, as I say, kind of put it in easy to understand language. And if there's any questions, we can touch on those at the end. So for first, I would just ask George to talk us through how we've got to this funny point in time.
So, yeah, if we look at Brexit developments over the past month, that's left the political landscape pretty much beyond recognition to where it was a month ago. So if we cast our minds back to mid-September, there was no movement really on either side, and that really led to the belief that the prospect of a deal by the 31st of October was relatively slim. Unsurprisingly, the key sticking point for a deal is how to avoid a hard border between Northern Ireland and the Republic in the event of a no-deal Brexit. And that's really been the only consistent theme for Brexit over the past few years. Now, if you remember, our former Prime Minister, Theresa May, she agreed what is called the Irish backstop with the EU. That would have seen the whole of the UK remain in the EU customs union, and then Northern Ireland would be in a partial regulatory union with the EU. But that was obviously rejected by the House of Commons, both by hardline Tory Eurosceptics as well as by the DUP, who obviously the government is in a confidence and supply arrangement with. And their main opposition is that the UK wouldn't be able to leave the backstop until suitable alternative arrangements were reached. And they also objected to the fact that some limited checks on goods travelling between Great Britain and Northern Ireland would be necessary. And that obviously contributed to her departure from Downing Street and led to Boris Johnson coming to power. Now, he sought to replace the backstop with an alternative Irish protocol. So what that does is it sees the whole of the UK in its own customs territory, including Northern Ireland, but with the exception of Northern Ireland, which would be in a regulatory union with the Republic and, as such, the EU. That, however, did initially run into opposition with the Taoiseach, Leo Varadkar. So that led to the meeting we saw last week between the two leaders, in which point they agreed a new set of arrangements. Now, we don't precisely know what these are at the moment, but it's led to negotiators going into the tunnel, and those talks look to have been quite challenging, but they do look to be fairly close to reaching a deal. Indeed, just before we went on the call today, I've got Michel Barnier, who's the chief EU negotiator. He said the Brexit deal is almost completed, and that's given Sterling a bit of support.
Okay. And in terms of the deal which is being proposed, could you just give us a little bit more detail to it as to what it looks like and what it means?
Well, unfortunately, we still don't know the precise details of the deal at the moment. We were hoping that we might do so before the conference call, but the talks really have gone down to the wire in Brussels. There are still some niggling points that they are negotiating over. But based on reports, it's looking like they're fairly close. All but one of the outstanding issues has supposedly been resolved. The sticking point, apparently, according to the papers, is how VAT will be treated in Northern Ireland under the revised protocol. That's said to be a red line for the EU, that the UK's demand that Northern Ireland has a separate VAT regime for Ireland, but we're not expecting that will be a deal killer, as it were. But of course, the big news this morning is the fact that the DUP has delivered a blow to the Prime Minister. They've signalled that it cannot support what's currently being suggested on both on customs and consent issues. And obviously that's a significant development, because you know the Prime Minister's job of getting a deal through the House of Commons is significantly more challenging without the support of the DUP. Of course, the Prime Minister has been aware of this the whole time, which is why he's been keeping the DUP in the loop as negotiations have ongoing, and actually partly explains why we've seen negotiations drag on so long.
Okay, and with a lot of talk about the EU summit and Parliament sitting or potentially sitting on Saturday, I think the big question is, what does the next week look like? What are the different scenarios in which we could find ourselves over the next few days, or let's just say over the next week?
Yes, so it's highly uncertain, but the sort of our own expectation at the moment is that it looks like a deal's on the cards, and it doesn't look like the DUP's objections are going to hold that up. So it looks like we may get a deal. It's not clear whether it'll be presented today or tomorrow, but you know, assuming that EU leaders are presenting with the deal and they give it the green light, then what that then means is that we need to get the approval from the House of Commons. Now, Mr. Johnson scheduled a Saturday session of Parliament. That does need to be approved by MPs, but Labour's actually given its backing this morning, so it does look like that Saturday session is going to go ahead. And that will be the first Saturday session since the Falklands War in 1982, so it's quite an unusual event. Now, what he's going to try and do is he's going to try and get the meaningful vote, as it's called, through Parliament. Now, if you recall, Theresa May tried not once, not twice, but three times, and failed on all occasions to get that meaningful vote through. Obviously, the backstop was the key issue, and Boris Johnson's hope is that now he's got this new Irish protocol that should help to alleviate some of the concerns which held it up in the first place. But if we look at the numbers, if you look at the last vote that Theresa May held, that lost by 58 votes. So Boris needs about 30 MPs on net to swing behind it if he has any hope of succeeding in the meaningful vote. That's no means unsurmountable, but important to note that we're in a very different situation now than where we were with Theresa May. So obviously we've got a minority government, even with the DUP support. So if you actually look at the numbers, the Prime Minister is 45 MPs short of majority. That's largely as a consequence of him having suspended the whip from the 21 rebel MPs who backed the legislation aimed at preventing a no-deal Brexit on the 31st of October. Now, he may well be able to coax the majority back to the Tories, but just note that a number will be next to impossible to win back over. For instance, Sam Gamaya, he's defected now to the Liberal Democrats. Meanwhile, Rory Stewart's running as an independent candidate for the Mayor of London, so he can't obviously go back to the Tory party. But, you know, if the Prime Minister can win over the DUP, and it's a big if, then he stands a better chance of success. Obviously, the comments this morning suggest some caution on that front. But if he can do that, then he's likely to win over the Eurosceptics. Bear in mind that quite a few of them aligned themselves with the DUP the last time round in rejecting the offer from Theresa May. And then, like I say, it's a big if, but he gets the DUP on board, he gets the ERG on board. He's not quite there. He does need to still get a few more sympathetic Labour MPs. So five last time backed the deal. He's going to need a few more to do so. And indeed, we have had a letter signed by about 19 Labour MPs who signalled that they would be willing to back a deal under certain conditions. So overall, there's a realistic chance the deal goes through. There's a lot of working parts at the moment. Like I say, it depends on the deal actually being reached. We're not at that stage yet. The EU needs to agree it, but presuming all that happens, the focus is very much going to be on Saturday. But you know, if we don't get a deal through this this weekend, it's looking like we're going to get a special summit on the 29th to the 30th of October, and then you know there might be some more tweaks to the deal, or you know, dotting the I's, crossing the T's, that sort of thing.
So is there much hope of getting, well, is there much hope of us leaving the EU with a deal or with no deal at the end of the month?
Mm-hmm. There's a possibility that we will leave with a deal. Well, there's no possibility of us leaving with or without a deal at the end of the month, I should say. Because let's say you get the deal through, he's successful on Saturday. The fact remains that MPs still need to scrutinise and ratify a vast amount of legislation to implement this deal. And if you look at, you know, even having Saturday, Sunday sessions of Parliament, it's very unlikely that they're going to have enough time. So it's likely you're going to need at least a technical extension in the event that there is a deal. But alternatively, you know, you've talked about if there isn't a deal, if MPs reject a deal, then under the terms of the Benn Act, which, as you'll recall, was passed in September, that compels the government to seek a three-month extension if that's not done, if Parliament has not sanctioned a deal by this Saturday, actually. So under that, those terms, Boris Johnson will be requesting a three-month extension. And although he's been suggesting in the past that he wouldn't do so, we actually had Stephen Barclay in Parliament yesterday suggesting that the UK government would actually do so. On that front as well, I'd just make another point, is that the Act also makes the provision for the EU to reject that offer and propose an alternative extension. Now, that can be shorter, it can be longer than the 3 months. Obviously, we'd expect in the scenario that if we've got no deal, or, you know, depending on the circumstances, they'd maybe lean more heavily on a longer extension. And if so, then the Prime Minister would have 2 days within which to accept the offer. So, yeah, either way, very unlikely that we're going to be leaving on the 31st of October, deal or no deal, essentially.
Okay. I will double back to what, I guess, what outcome you think we're going to get, and then, in turn, what I think a lot of people are interested in is its impact on the pound. But for now, even just before this call, you and I were discussing, in essence, how we find ourselves in this situation and the conversation about having an election.
Mm-hmm.
Do we think we're going to have a election regardless of what happens over the next few months?
Yes, regardless, Ian. It's not really a question of if we're going to have a snap general election, it's really when. You know, the simple fact is, as I said earlier in the call, is that the government has is short of a majority. You know, even if it was able to win back the rebel MPs and get the DUP back on board, it would still be short of a majority. You had Philip Lee defecting to the Lib Dems. So, you know, even if Boris Johnson were to win back a number of MPs, he's still, you know, going to struggle to govern. So, for instance, we've had the Queen's speech earlier on in the week. That sets out the government's legislative agenda, and there's talk of that being rejected on Monday, Tuesday. So, you know, we're in a situation where, you know, the government is not functioning. So we need a general election in order to restore the balance. And Boris Johnson's aware of this, of course. He's actually tried twice now to call an election, but failed, obviously, on both occasions. The reason is because under the Fixed Term Parliaments Act, he needs two-thirds of MPs to vote in favour of the motion, but so far the opposition have refused to grant one. An alternative is if the opposition actually wins a vote of no confidence, in which case that would trigger an early election if no alternative government could muster the support of the Commons within 14 days. Now, obviously, the fact is the opposition is refusing to back a general election, and the reason is because they are concerned that because the date of the election would be really the prerogative of the Prime Minister, that he would do so in order to try and force through a no-deal Brexit. And so the opposition have signalled that they want to wait until the 31st of October has passed, they can be guaranteed that the extension goes through, and then they've signalled that they will back a general election. But obviously some questions whether they will or not. And so one proposed workaround has been a one-line bill. And so that would effectively say and a general election would be on this day. And the advantage of this for the Prime Minister would just need a simple majority to pass. So overall, pretty clear that there's going to be an early election at some point, but the real question is when, of course. Well, some factors to bear in mind. One of the key ones is that Parliament must be dissolved 25 working days before an election, and that can only be done after a royal proclamation has set the election date. So, in layman's terms, you need at least 5 weeks, or more than 5 weeks notice to schedule a general election. So if we assume that the opposition waits until after the 31st of October, then, and they do it in the week after, they do it in the week afterwards, then the earliest possible date, providing they stick to the convention that is to have it on a Thursday, would be the 12th of December. Now, that's significant because you've had the more senior civil servant reportedly tell the government that it would be virtually impossible to hold an election any later than that. You've got the after that, you've not really got it's not really practical because you've got venues such as school halls booked up for Christmas. There's no space really for polling booths. And indeed, I think actually the most important aspect of that date is it's actually the Economist's Christmas party. So
you got other things on your mind.
Indeed, it's to use to take a word out of the EU's playbook. It's a red line, I think, for me.
That's fair. And in terms of when we get this election, we wake up, well, at least for myself, I wake up on a Sunday, I look at some of the Sunday papers, and there's numerous polls sort of coming out on a week-to-week basis. In terms of your view on things, what do you see the outcome in terms of the result of the next election, if it was to be, let's just say, in the next couple months?
Yes. So if we look at the polls, the Conservatives are doing really rather well. In most cases, a double-digit lead over Labour. And, you know, if you look at that basis, it looks like the Boris would be comfortably on course to win an outright majority, and he'd actually be able to dispense with the confidence and supply arrangement with the DUP, which has been a real thorn in his side, I guess, as well as the former Prime Minister. But there are a number of reasons why the polls might be overestimating how well the Tories would do in a snap general election. For one, I would point out that most of the polls put the Conservatives somewhere in the kind of mid-30s as percent. But, you know, if you recall back to 2017, Theresa May won 40% of the vote, and she obviously didn't win an outright majority. So then, you know, if you consider other things, Boris has various challenges on the regional front. If you look at Scotland, for instance, the party's under a lot of pressure from the SNP after we had the Scottish Tory leader, Ruth Davidson, step down earlier this year, and she played a key role in securing a number of challenging seats for Theresa May in 2017. But you look at the South West, you look at London, the Lib Dems are obviously making gains, so they're going to be squeezed in that front. And then, obviously, depending on how events play out over the next week, he may have to contend with the Brexit Party in the North. And finally, it's how many of the 21 rebel MPs come back to the Tories, because, you know, if they choose to fight the next election as independents, and if parties such as the Lib Dems agree to a kind of non-confrontational pact, then as they have suggested they would, then that could cause a bit of an issue for Boris, because obviously it would stem Tory gains. So overall, as things stand, Boris looks on course to win a majority, but I think reasons to take the polls with a pinch of salt.
Okay. And I guess the main thing which I've been focused on over the last week is people asking the question, what do we see the pound doing from here? Obviously, it's rallied in the last week circa 4% for importers and exporters. This is a big, big question. What do you see happening from here?
We're expecting a lot of the same, a lot of volatility. As we've seen, sterling has moved sharply one way or the other on a single headline. And throughout the day, we've seen huge swings in the currency. So, looking over the immediate horizon, it's going to depend first on we get the deal or not. Then it's going to be how things play out in Parliament, you know, whether it looks like we're going to get a meaningful vote. If it is successful, we're likely to see sterling strengthen, obviously, despite a certain degree of that being priced in. So versus the dollar, we're probably going to see it maybe go into the 130s, maybe with the euro 120-ish. But conversely, if it looks like nothing's going to pass the Commons before the election, it's probably going to see a rather rapid unwinding of the strength that's been built in over the past couple of weeks. But beyond that, as we've been discussing, an election's on the cards, And, you know, investors will be weighing up how that's going to shape up. Obviously, if we get a, it looks like we're on course to get a sizable Tory majority, that's going to give further support to sterling. But the key risk really is that any sign that Jeremy Corbyn, obviously the Labour leader, may have a chance of getting into number 10. Obviously, he's had various policies that have caused concern in the business community, you know, pledges to nationalise rail, water, postal industries, the big rises in corporate tax that have been laid out. But yeah, beyond this, then you've got to have the questions over the eventual trading relationship between the UK and EU. So we're actually expecting that any sterling gains will be capped by that. So in short, we're not looking for the currency to return automatically to the levels it was before the referendum, but we are looking for the further gains, assuming a deal is passed and ratified by the House of Commons.
Okay, so it still very much feels up in the air. If you could just summarise what you see happening over the next little while, just for us again, mm-hmm. What do you think are the big events, and what do you think are the main scenarios which people, importers and exporters, should be considering?
Mm-hmm. Certainly the European summit today and tomorrow, that's going to be a key focus. Then the focus will be on Saturday sitting of Parliament. It's between 9:30 in the morning till 2:30. We're expecting the vote sometime within then if there is a deal. Beyond that, or indeed on that day, it'll be a question mark over whether we get the extension, how long that is. We won't get the immediate acceptance of the EU, so there'll be a question mark initially over the next week over what extension we do get, and then beyond that, obviously, like I say, there's a lot of uncertainty. It depends how events play out over the next few days, but you know, then it'll be the kind of election that's going to be the key focus to watch. So I think, you know, when you're talking at the beginning about sterling vols over the next 2 months, that really plays into those events. There's a lot happening over the next couple of months, a lot of things to be aware of.
Okay, and something which we probably don't talk enough about nowadays is the Bank of England and interest rates and so forth. Do you have much of a view as to where you see short-term interest rates going, I guess, depending on what the different scenarios would be?
Yes. Yes. So, for instance, under the current makeup of the House of Commons, a no-deal Brexit's very unlikely. As we've seen, they passed the legislation to try and avert one on the 31st of October. But if you do get an election, and depending on how the makeup changes, the risk of a no deal will come back into, or could come back into play, I should say. But that isn't necessarily our base case at the moment. Our base case is that, you know, we get the election, Tories win a majority of some sort, and you know, we get a deal, it's ratified. On that scenario, we're looking for interest rates in the UK to be raised in May 2021. So there's quite a long distance to go until we get there. Currently, the base rate is 0.75%. We're looking for it to go up to 1%. So these are small steps. These aren't huge moves. And the key focus for the Bank of England, and it has been for the past over 2 years now, has been the labour market. And they're looking at the labour market. They're saying that, I'm sure a lot of your clients will tell you this, but there's a scarcity of workers, so companies are struggling to get workers, and so there's a lot of pressure on pay awards, and then that in turn threatens inflation, which is obviously the Bank of England's objective. But it has been reticent for quite some time. The last time it raised rates was August last year. The reason it's been reticent to raise rates any further is because of the B word, Brexit, and more recently it's the global economic outlook. You know, if you see the US-China dispute, it's quite evident now that the spillovers from that are having a material impact on global growth. In fact, our own forecasts, we're looking for global growth to be below 3% this year. That'll be the weakest since the financial crisis. Another factor is actually that now we haven't had this completely confirmed by the rest of the committee, but Michael Saunders, so the way the Bank of England sets interest rates is there's 9 members on the Monetary Policy Committee. They meet every 6 weeks, and he is considered the most hawkish member generally on the committee. Now, he really surprised markets a few weeks ago now, where he said, even if we get a Brexit deal, I think it's perfectly plausible that the next move in bank rate, i.e. interest rates, could be down rather than up. So there are question marks over whether the committee as well is shares Mr. Saunders' views. So that's one thing to bear in mind. But Ian, you did say under various other scenarios, and obviously the alternative scenarios, if we don't get a deal, if the UK leaves on trades with the UK, the EU on WTO terms, for instance.
You mean a no-deal Brexit?
A no-deal Brexit, yes. Mm-hmm. Under that scenario, the Bank of England has been at pains to stress that the move in interest rates would not be automatic and could move in either direction. In other words, they might raise rates, they might lower rates, but they're not certain. Now, it depends on rather technical factors as an economist what you would put greater emphasis on. But in our own view at the Investec Economics Desk is that in a no-deal Brexit, the bank would lower rates. And indeed, actually, some of the individual members of the committee have gone to at pains to stress their own personal view, including the governor of the Bank of England. He himself, Mark Carney, has said that he thinks it's more likely than not that rates would be lower. But of course, his term ends in January. We're set to have a new governor from February next year.
Perfect. And just before we open it up to questions from the audience, it is just that point about, I say, trade tensions and this global growth story. Do we feel like the UK is, whether we realise it at the moment because of the Brexit storm or not, do we think that we're going to get caught in this potentially slowing economy, and that is what actually could help us, well, in turn mean that we lower rates as the Americans have been doing and as others have been doing?
Yes, there has been a lot of in some quarters criticism levied at the Bank of England for not following their peers. You mentioned in the States, but also the ECB, and I think globally there's about 45 central banks now that have eased policy on net this year, possibly even more. But Andy Haldane, who's the chief economist, he's been saying that the UK occupies what he characterises as an unusual mid-Atlantic position, and effectively it's the inflation issue that he's been highlighting. But more recently, that inflation issue seems to have subsided, and you're right. As an open economy, the UK is very open in terms of trading relationships. We are therefore we benefit when the global economy does well, but obviously it means we also suffer when the global economy does likewise, and particularly given our closest neighbour. So a lot has been made of Germany, for instance. There's a lot of talk that Germany has entered a recession at the moment. Partly that's the spillovers from the trade dispute you were discussing, but also structural changes in the automotive industry. So consumers now are very reluctant to purchase diesel vehicles, given that regulators around the world are cutting back on them, as well as the kind of environmental concerns over their use. So yes, there's certainly growing pressure on the Bank of England to lower rates, but it's so far we've not had any signal from them that that's their likely next move.
Perfect. Well, I think for me that gives a great summary of where we've come from, where we're potentially going. No one knows. I think it is worthwhile at this point putting it out to you guys. If anyone has any questions, please can you ask them now?
Okay, we have a question coming through from the line of Jessica Ma. Hi there, apologies. I was just looking on behalf of our sterling buyers, how far we can sterling fall in the case of a no-deal Brexit at the end of the month.
Yes. Well, in the scenario of a no-deal Brexit, our own estimates suggest that versus the euro, we may see the pound reach parity. That's not out of kilter with what other expectations are. And indeed, if dollar is your kind of currency of choice, we're looking at going down to kind of like 110, maybe below levels of that. But of course, Jessica, it depends very much on what the no-deal Brexit looks like. At the end of the month, I would say that those levels seem appropriate, but to give you an example is that a no-deal Brexit looks very different to how it did the 29th of March. So, for instance, the government has introduced various contingency measures now, which mean that a no-deal Brexit is not necessarily expected to be as severe as it would have been previously. You may see further mitigating measures if that kind of Brexit deadline is extended and we get a no deal at a later date. And it also depends on the time of year you get it. So, for instance, as we're speaking now, we've just had reports that the DUP is on board with the Brexit deal, so obviously that's going to be taken as a positive. We're expecting that sterling will be rallying on that news.
It is sterling dollars at 129, which is somewhere we haven't been, at least in terms of recent days. It's probably about a 5 or 6 month high.
That's fantastic news. So yeah, if the DUP are genuinely on board, we are going to get the deal hopefully either today or tomorrow, hoping that that goes through Parliament on Saturday. It's looking very likely that we'll see sterling going to the 130s. But yes, coming back to the no deal analysis, if it depends on the time of year that the Brexit deal would be. So, for instance, 29th of March, there was capacity for stockpiling. The talk at the moment is, and I think Ian's clients will probably tell him this, is that a lot of these warehouses now on the 31st of October are being used up by retailers ahead of Christmas. So the possibility of stockpiling is reduced greatly as a consequence, and so the kind of the cushion you can build to offset some of that impact is diminished.
Thank you very much. Yes, I think that, as I say, gives us a great summary of where we've been, where we're potentially going. And I think for anyone on the line now, most typically it is importers or exporters, the question is, what do I do and how do I protect myself over the next little while? Do I leave more to spot? Do I hedge more? Do I look at outperformance? And I think it just comes back to this point of, it's about a conversation. So if there's anything you want to pick up from today's call, I would suggest getting in touch with your dealer or your client manager if you're yet to sign up with us. If you want to get plugged into someone like George, I'm sure he'd be more than happy to answer any specific questions, be it on email or over the phone. And I think in moments like these, it's really for us to be your eyes and ears and to give you a little bit more bespoke commentary as to what other people in your industry are thinking about and doing, and solutions that are kind of custom built for you. So if there's anything you need, as I say, reach out to your Investec contact. If you don't have one as of yet, my name is Ian Wilson. My email address is ian.wilson@investec.co.uk. So fire me a line and I will be more than happy to help. But definitely in these times, lean on us and we will do all that we can to help you cut through the noise.